Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Dan Aronson, or Press 1 for Democracy. Welcome, everyone. I think we're going to have a pretty good show today based on the responses that we've seen on the Facebook pages and some other posts. We're going to be talking about dark money. We're going to talk about the influence of dark money, but we're also going to be talking about where dark money comes from, what are the organizations who funnel it, and maybe come through with a few surprises as to some of the organizations and the origins of said organizations who are actually helping to funnel dark money into our political arena and thus push us, the people, out as far as the influence that we're having in Washington today. So, again, Dan Aronson with Press One for Democracy. I'd like to welcome you all in. See, we have a lively chat room going already. As well as a couple of callers that are coming online. So, again, if you wish to be part of the conversation, it's going to be a little bit difficult for me tonight. I do not have my normal co-host, Debbie Lynn Molyneux, riding shotgun with me. So I usually have a couple of folks that are going to come in and help me out in the chat rooms, but it's a little hard for me to keep an eye on the board, the chat rooms, and work the studio. So forgive me, chat room folks, if I don't get to you right away. But if you do want to call in, and that's really the purpose of the show, and I think that's the most fun thing that we get on the show is our callers. We have our regular contributors, of course. We've got Jack and Laura and Neil from Fort Lauderdale and, people from all across the country. And I think it's probably because all across the country people are concerned about where our democracy is going and what is the part of us, the people, what is it going to be going on down the line if, in fact, we cannot find a way to get money out of politics. So if you want to call in to be part of the show, please do at 646 929-2495. Again, that's 646-929-2495. And you can either just keep yourself on hold and listen to the show that way versus doing it on the streaming blog talk channel. But when you do get in into the caller queue, all you have to do is hit 1, and that's what the show is all about. Press 1 for democracy. You hit 1 in the call. The little cue light will tell me you are waiting to speak and to interact with us, because again, this is a coffee party radio show, and what are we about if nothing more than having nice civil discussions about important topics, sticking to the facts, and then finding common ground amongst all different viewpoints, and of course, leading to the most important thing, which is common solutions. So, when you call in, or if you're in the chats and you want to, have some fun calling some people out or call out your political opponents, it's all good and well. But please remember to have solutions behind those complaints, if you will. So let's talk for a second about dark money. What exactly is dark money? So it's important in political discussions to make sure that we're all talking about the same things. A couple of comments we got on the main Facebook page talked about, well, we need to make sure we are defining our terms in the same way so that when we have these discussions, we are reaching those better solutions, and we're all speaking the same language. So, I like Wikipedia myself. Wikipedia is what I like to call it. It is the voice or the dictionary of the people, right? So I always like to take my definitions from Wikipedia because they get vetted by a lot of people. It's not just one guy sitting up in an ivory tower to decide this is what this means, or one person in a, who's employed by a 1% media outlet who's trying to bend it into meaning something it's not in order to gain a political advantage in a discussion. So I always like the Wikipedia version. So dark money, according to Wikipedia, is a term for funds used to pay for an election campaign without disclosure before voters go to the polls. Funds can be spent on behalf of a candidate running an election or to influence voting on a ballot question. But again, the key thing with dark money is nobody knows where it comes from. All right, and if you look at, according to Mother Jones, nearly half of the money spent by outside political groups in 2010, in the 2010 midterm elections, was dark money. And in the 2012 election, the 2012 elections, according to the Sunlight Foundation, approximately $213 million was spent by dark money organizations. So again, these are donations that are going to campaigns that you just don't know where they come from. You have no idea. And, you know, everybody is very familiar, I think, because they've been called out many times, and as they should be, with the more right-leaning groups. And, in fact, the Sunlight Foundation has, made it very clear in a study that about 81% of all the money spent by dark money in the 2012 elections was spent on behalf of Republicans or other right-wing causes. So about 20% on the Democratic side. But not many people talk about the dark money organizations that support left-leaning causes, right? So we know on the right we have like Knowledge and Progress Fund, which is the Koch brothers. We know that our chapter out in New York has been doing a long-term action against the Koch brothers, and I think it's a fine thing they're doing there. But I think tonight we're going to make sure that we do what is mandated by the coffee party, and we look at this in a transpartisan manner and make sure that we're calling out everybody, because getting some dark money out isn't really going to help us. It's really about getting all the dark money out of the situation. We have the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, who was acted on by one of our sister organizations, actually a coalition of our sister organizations, last summer, demanding disclosure, or at least asking that they disclose. And again, we know that they're the single largest contributor to PACs of anybody, and again, mostly right-leaning. So dark money, not a good thing, right? How do we know? It's not a good thing because it's really simple. What we know is this. What we know is that the Supreme Court, in its overturning of Citizens United, said the mere propriety or the mere appearance of corruption isn't good enough. We have to be able to establish basically quid pro quo. Well, how can we establish quid pro quo if these people who are buying influence in our government do not, if we have no way of knowing who they are? And so it's a problem that's being compounded on a regular basis. And at this point, I'm sure you've all heard me chatting long enough, so I'm going to bring in caller from 954. And who do I have the pleasure of speaking with?
Hi, it's Neil from Fort Lauderdale. How you doing?
Neil from Fort Lauderdale. I hope you heard me on my opening mention you as one of our regular callers, and we always appreciate when you do call in.
No, I appreciate it. Yes, we have all this dark money, and, you know, one of the major things, I think a lot of the tax havens, the banks, the oil companies, they are funding everything. Just over and over again, the same thing. They're not caring about people. They're the biggest welfare queens. They 25% of the corporations in this country don't pay any taxes. The remaining that do pay a very nominal rate because of the massive loopholes. On top of that, there's the billions of dollars they get in subsidies and grants from the federal government. I mean, it really, it's not that we don't have money. It's just, it's misappropriation of funds on a grand scale.
Well, and it's not only, as you point out, it's not only misappropriation of funds on a grand scale, but it's the actual funneling up of money from the middle and the lower classes in the forms of these subsidies and these tax breaks that these corporations are getting. And then, of course, that, you know, it's all a nice little domino effect, right? So when you do that, then all of a sudden there's not enough money to pay for things like, Social Security and Medicare and the kinds of things that we've all paid into for years and years that we now, hey, okay, it's our turn. We're ready to get some of that money back now. Oh, I'm sorry, there's no money left. Well, why is there no money left? Well, because the people at the top aren't paying taxes. Not only are they not paying taxes, but they're getting subsidies. So I'm sorry, we can't afford Social Security. I mean,
not only that, it's the trillions of dollars offshore and everything else. And the thing is, you know what's going to happen? What we're really missing is the real elephant in the room is that our infrastructure, it's going to happen eventually. I hope it doesn't happen for a while. One of our bridges is going to collapse. There's going to be thousands of people, maybe tens of thousands, killed or hurt. The Republicans are going to react the same way they reacted with BP. They're going to be more concerned with lawsuits and everything else than the loss of lives and the loss of commerce. To them, it's another way to say that we don't have any money. It's all the shell game. I mean, I think that the Democrats have their hands controlled by banks as well. I mean, they're above the law. They can basically funnel drug money without any form of recourse. There's no one going to jail. They were fined the equivalent of, let's say, I think 2 weeks worth of profits. We're living in a land where not only is it plutocratic, but they're giving us the middle finger, and both sides are not doing anything about it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And again, I mean, Neil, would you agree with me in echoing the sentiment that most of the outrage and the screaming out there that is done either in the media or just by the public in general is aimed at right-wing groups like U.S. Chamber of Commerce, like the Koch brothers, and not really, I mean, nobody's really looking for that kind of corruption going on coming from the other side.
Well, the thing is, the media is owned by the same corporations who are making all this money. I mean, if we had really true media except for the Internet, every day they would be talking about the corruption, the trillions of dollars offshore. You don't even hear about it. You don't hear about the need for infrastructure. You don't hear about with the sequester how children are going to be suffering from this. Meals on Wheels. You don't hear about how the fund for the 9/11 people who died and now that is going to be cut because of the sequester. You don't hear about that. You don't hear about what's going to be happening. It's going to be kept out of the media, but people in the next 4 to 5 months are going to be suffering greatly. The sequester was designed to pay for Bush's wars. That's why it really, the Republicans, they got everything they want with the sequester because they got cuts. Massive amounts of cuts. And now we have Paul Ryan, who is the biggest joker on the planet, who's basically saying, okay, I'm going to, budget everything and it's going to be fine in 10 years. We're going to get rid of Obamacare, which is not going to happen. If the media was real every day, they would be railing against the billions and trillions of dollars of subsidies, the trillions offshore. They would be railing. You never hear about that. You never hear about what's going on and where the money is. That's why I don't trust the media. I watch MSNBC, but I'm disappointed because, again, I think they're owned by the same people who are trying to protect their money.
No, I totally agree with you. And not only, I mean, they're owned by it, they're also, I mean, to me, it's also a matter of simple business, right? If I promote a certain agenda, then I'm going to attract a certain group of listeners or viewers or readers. And if I can predict who I view, I can turn around and I can go to advertisers. I could say, hey, I've got your demographic all sewn up over here. So I mean, it even gets down to just a really more basic marketing play where they're pandering to a group of people so that they can capture them and then turn around and sell them to the appropriate suppliers. So yeah, I mean, I do not trust the 1% media at all, and I think one of the main thrusts of the Coffee Party moving forward has been identified as to actually try to give an alternative outlet to the 1% media where where, again, promoting the coffee party, civility, fact-based, and transpartisan, where we can actually come and have discussions. And I think one of the organizations I found out there as I was looking for my show or researching for the show was the Sunshine Foundation or the Sunlight Foundation. Are you familiar with that, Neil?
No, sir.
Okay. So yeah, so they're a 501(c). They're an educational organization. They were founded in April of 26, and really their primary goal is to promote transparency and accountability within the government. So it's a totally nonpartisan effort, and they have been actually gotten accolades from people like PBS. They had Mark Tapscott of PBS who said this. He goes, on the key point of bringing the federal government into the digital age and thereby vastly increasing its transparency and accountability, I think Sunlight's doing more good things on a wider front than anybody ever has done before. So again, this is a nonpartisan group. They've done a lot of really cool things. If you go on to their website, it's www.sunlightfoundation.com. It's amazing. They've created apps that give you near real-time information on what's going on Capitol Hill in the actual halls of the Capitol building. And it's an amazing thing they've done. But I think above all, it's if these people are calling people out, and they call out both sides. They're the ones who called out that 81% of the dark money in 2010, the midterms, were spent on behalf of Republicans. But more recently, and I wanted to focus a little bit on this, they called out a different dark money organization. And, you know, when they said it, I was like, oh, come on, that's silly, right? But a recent blog article came out, and it was entitled "A Dark Money Organization," "Dark Money by Any Other Name." And what they were talking about is they're talking about the organizers or Organizing for America. You've heard of Organizing for America?
No, but I'm looking at the Sunlight right now. I have it on my phone.
Yeah, so Organizing for America is actually a not-for-profit, basically dark money organization that used to be known as the Re-Election Campaign Foundation for Barack Obama. So they've taken what was the money creating machine or money making machine that President Obama used to drive his fundraising, and they have created basically a dark money organization out of it that allows for I'll give you some examples here. So actually, at the beginning, this was kind of outrageous. I mean, basically, they had people running around within this organization saying, "Yeah, if you give us enough money, we'll actually give you direct access to the president." They kind of put a clamp on that really quickly and said, no, that's not what we meant. We didn't mean that. We didn't say that. That's not what we're doing. And they went actually kind of started reforming right away as soon as that got out, to the point where they were saying, we're not even going to take money from corporations. We're not going to take money from federal lobbyists. We're not going to take money from foreign donors. We don't want – this is not, you know, the president for sale. So they quickly had to retreat on that. But the fact is what's left – is an organization that anybody can donate to as an individual now, right? And there's no there was no disclosure. So then I said, okay, I'll tell you what, we'll go ahead and we'll report on our donors quarterly, right? So that's great, but if you're 2 months from an election, or you're 2 months from a vote on an important issue, what good is it knowing 3 months later who is the one who's donating? Really, you know. So it's kind of a start, but it's kind of weak. The other thing they're not doing is that they're not going to disclose the occupation, not going to disclose the employer of the donors that are. And so there's no way to be able to track it back to a specific industry or a specific interest. And most troubling of all, as far as I'm concerned, they're not going to disclose anything on bundlers, right? So we're all familiar with bundlers now, right? These people that go around and they get little contributions, but they got lots of them, and then they come and they hand the big wad to the particular organization or to the particular candidate, so we're not going to have any of that. So really, I mean, what is it that they're not really, you know, what are we going to know as far as disclosure? I mean, that's fairly weak as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it's basically, it's like the American people, we're not being active enough. We're just like, almost like in a daze. It just seems like, they're taking away our rights. They're basically creating, I mean, there's always been a matter of plutocracy going on. But we're putting up with it. And I hear Paul Ryan, and I hear this man, I say, this is the biggest snake oil salesman I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I don't care if he's a Republican. I wouldn't buy a car from him. And he's telling me that there's no money when I know there's plenty of money. And like I said, for me, you know, there's just a misappropriation of priorities and funds. I mean, there's quadrillions of dollars that is available, but it just basically – it goes to their masters. It goes to the oil companies. It goes to all the industry, and we're left out in the cold. And then they call themselves patriots. And the thing is, we have to challenge them on their patriotism. We have to challenge them on their lack of Christianity. We have to challenge them on everything because they're just frauds, complete frauds.
I would have to agree with you. I would absolutely have to agree with you. Any closing thoughts, Neil?
No, I appreciate you having me on this long, but I really appreciate the show, and thank you for letting me speak.
Always a pleasure, Neil. And again, as always, as we click you into the green room, as I like to call it, if you hit one, then your hand will go down, and if you come up on the other side and you have something else to say, then obviously click one again, and we'll get you right back on into the queue. So. I see that there's some lively chat room stuff going on here. Let's see what we got here. Find out who made the decisions from within the corporations and hold those people responsible. That is an interesting. So this is it looks like I'm trying to see who said that. It's hard for me exactly to tell based on this chat room. I apologize who it is who's saying that. That's a great idea. So one of the things that one of our sister organizations is doing is they're actually going out and they're going to the Corporate Ethics Network and PERG are going out and they are actually organizing locally actions at stockholder meetings to try to get the stockholders or their boards of directors to say, you know what, we're going to stop giving money. And whether it's stop giving money through dark money organizations and starting to disclose or whether they want to stop doing it at all, those are actions that are going on. And we're going to be letting you guys know so that if you want to hook up with these people on a local basis, the first one is coming up here at the end of March. It's going to be an action directed at Starbucks. Where actually they have made some progress. They are talking about total disclosure. They're talking about potentially even stopping any political donations without the approval of their shareholders. So they're making some good progress there, and perhaps we're looking for a corporation who would want to lead that charge against corporate donations. Let's see what else is going on. So just to get back more into the mechanics of what's going on at the OFA, right? So they've decided that they're going to put some measures into play, but here's what they won't do, and this is the troubling stuff. What they've come out and they said, and Jim Messina is the executive director. He was President Obama's campaign director, and he said we won't guarantee access to government officials. That's what he said. He said that's what we do. We will not guarantee access to government officials. But that's not the same thing as saying we won't grant you access. He's just saying we won't guarantee it. So even what was kind of an almost an outwardly boast at the beginning of the program, or at the beginning of this organization's life cycle, was we will grant you access if you pass enough money. Now it's we won't guarantee you access, but nobody's saying they won't do it. And then the final piece of the puzzle is what else they won't do is everything is voluntary. Okay, there's not going to be any audits. There's not any enforcement. We're just going to have to believe them that they're telling us everything that's going on. And the other thing they're not doing is, but one of the things that could possibly happen due to these very lax self-imposed regulations, if you will, is, for example, a CEO of a company could write a check, get it totally refunded out of their corporate coffers, but nobody would ever be the wiser. So it's not like they're not going to great lengths to hold their own feet to the fire, as it will. And as we all know, there's no disclosure. They beat back disclosure laws, and they we know about Citizens United. So really puts us in a pickle. But we do have another caller on the line now who's wanted to join us. Area code 518. Who are we speaking with?
Good evening, Dan. Joe Pomponio.
Joe Pomponio, how are you, my friend?
Hanging in there. Okay.
Yeah, how are things on the right coast?
Actually going rather well. I was at a conference call, and Governor Cuomo was on it. They have put together an initiative, Fair Elections New York. And we've got about 100 days. The goal is to get this dark money and contributions out of politics. The plan basically calls for public funding, something I support totally. The opposition, surprise, surprise, is the Republican side of the aisle. Now, this thing is very well organized. This conference call had about 1,000 people on it. A good number of the NAACP was there, unions were there, private business owners were calling in. I think what our callers should try to think about is what this money does essentially is buys the politician. The politician in turn, or even in an agency, has to be on the phone. They don't want to do this. I went to a town hall meeting Saturday with my federal representative for Congress, Paul Tonko, and he adamantly said, it's ridiculous. You have to spend all your time on the phone, and you're not there for that. You're there to represent your people. Now, on the state end, Governor Cuomo is behind that also. And the concept is just about even the Republican representatives admit that they want to be there for their constituents, okay, Democratic or Republican. But they are addicted to money, if I may use that phrase. And this is going to be something that we're going to build momentum for. Perhaps other states are going to pick up on it. That was discussed on a conference call. But we're hoping to be the ones to set the example. And essentially what it's modeled after, and I'm a former New York City resident myself, they do this in New York City. It's publicly financed campaigns. And I understand from the people that live down there that were on the conference call, it works very well. They have it in Connecticut. It enables anyone with minimal resources to make an attempt at representing the constituency. They told in this call they have retired municipal workers, former lawyers, not too many, leaders of groups, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, members of that actually can get involved in government where they never could before. And it really is a people's government. So, I'm on board with that. I think they've got a lot of good ideas. They're very organized. I posted on my website. I've been tweeting it, which is some of the things we're going to have to do here at the Coffee Party and Move to Amend, continually keep this thing up. The key that I garnered from all this is pressure, okay? Money may buy the constituent, but he needs the people to elect him. And if the people are motivated and tell them, you know, we don't want that, you represent us, and it's got to be a groundswell. It's got to be something that is on them all the time. It'll work. You know, and your dark money is tied into all of that. It's basic money. What scares me a little about dark money is you don't know where it's coming from. Fair Elections New York organization has full disclosure. That's part of the law. Okay? Contributions will be, if I remember it right, don't quote me on this, 7 to 1. So if I put in $5, all right, the candidate gets 7. No matter, yeah, I mean, whatever person I pick, somebody picks the opposing, they get the same money. It's fair. And they have to argue on the principles and the things that will benefit their constituents. And from what they described in Connecticut, it works very well because even though they have lobbyists, they're more concerned about the citizens than taking the money. And they said it's working out very well.
Well, I know that that's an idea, Joe, that's been proffered by several of our regular callers and by many, many people in the press. You know, you look at other countries and other places where they do things where there's serious campaign restrictions, right? Like in England, I think it's 120 days out. You can't actually campaign more than 120 days out, and you limit the monies, and you make things a lot more fair. The problem we face with those kinds of concepts is, you know, we're facing a Supreme Court that, at least on a national level, right, that doesn't believe that any kind of campaigning that should be limited because it's all speech, and therefore we can't limit campaigning, we can't limit money in the campaigns, we can't limit people's speech. They can campaign 24/7, 365. It's good to know that at least on the state levels, there are some states that are seeing some sense and making sense of it.
Okay, and if enough states pick up on it, okay, there is the base to go after the federal level.
No, exactly, and it calls into question the upper court's ruling, and all of a sudden. Either they have to be rethinking things, or you're building towards that.
We get an amendment.
Yeah, the amendment. Most of the legal scholars I've talked to say the amendment process is brutal. It's definitely a long game, right? It's not anything that's going to happen in the short term, and I think people in America are a little bit. I don't think we want to wait that long, personally. That's the feeling I get. I will tell you this. I constantly go back to these statistics. They did a poll right after the Citizens United decision came down, and 80% of the people in the United States said it was wrong. They disagreed with the decision, and 72% in a totally bipartisan reaction said we want Congress to pass laws limiting corporate money influence in elections. 72%, yet nothing has been done. Nothing of substance even gets to the floor. Nobody on either side is moving towards this, which kind of just by, you know, I know it's by assumption, I know it's by circumstantial evidence, but it proves they don't want that flow of money cut off because that's their money.
It is because the lobbyists are getting the money, okay? Another idea that's being brought up is the Article 5 Convention. Now, I'm being hypothetical. I'm not trying to say this is the surefire way to get it done. But if you had enough states where power were returned to the people on a state level, the motivation would be there to get an Article 5 convention. If you get the Article 5 convention, all right, you have the amendment. Now, if I'm reading it right, if what I'm following is correct, no amendments ever came about overnight. They are very difficult. But you know, you have to ask people to weigh out a consequence, okay? Do you want to be serfs, all right, to people in power? Do you want to see an aristocracy where people in certain incomes are dukes and others are royals and the rest are peasants? Because that's what it can lead to. Now, you wouldn't use that terminology. We'd use income scales. But the point is they'd be in charge and there would be no way for the average person to achieve the, quote, American dream, unquote, because they would have control of it.
You know, right.
You have to win hearts and minds to get something like this done.
I totally agree with you, Joe. 770, I see you're in queue and you got your hand raised. We're coming right to you in a second. I mean, I think all valid ideas, all good ideas, Joe. I'm glad to see that there are states that are actually not waiting around to allow this to be or to force this to be decided at the federal level. It is grassroots politics, and grassroots movements at its best, and I commend your work within that, Joe, and thank you for being a fan of the show and a regular contributor.
Okay.
All right. You have a good night. I'm going to go in again and put you into the green room, if you will. Feel free to hit 1 to take your hand down and 1 to re-raise your hand. 770, give me 1 second. I coming to the half-hour mark in the show, so I've got to do my little public service announcements. First of all, you are listening to Press 1 for Democracy. My name is Dan Aronson. I'm the host. I come to you every Monday night at 7 p.m. on the East Coast, 10 p.m. on the West Coast. Here every Monday discussing the hot topics of the day and trying to kind of maybe do it a little bit on the edge out there and stir the pot a bit so that we get some good transpartisan, civil, and fact-based conversation going. On Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 5 p.m. on the West Coast, you can tune in and you can hear Michael Charney and co-coffee party founder Eric Beiler on The Middle Ground. That's a great show. You've got Eric left-leaning, Michael right-leaning, both members of the board of directors and leading us on that transpartisan cruise, if you will. They're kind of our Julie McCoys. Don't tell them I said that. I don't know. If that gets back to them, they might be a little bit angry at that. But it's a great show always, and I know that this week they've got a special guest who's going to be discussing kind of on Michael's side. They're going to be discussing what is it like to run as a moderate Republican these days, in these days when the Tea Party is so dominant within that movement. On Thursdays, you can catch Lunch with Loudon. That's Janine Loudon and her co-host Debbie Lynn Molyneux. They get together at noon out on the Pacific Coast for lunch. You can catch a late lunch on the East Coast at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And, of course, Janine, very heavily invested in the Coffee Party feminist movement. Do a lot of work around women's issues, but Janine is also a brilliant financial mind and will be happy to talk to you pretty much brilliantly about any political subject you might want to bring up. Then on Saturdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. on the West Coast, we have Egberto Willis who brings us a great live roundtable chat show called okay, Egberto's about to shoot me now. Politics done right. I'm sorry, Egberto. And Egberto will open 7, 8, 9 mics at a time and have basically his callers all join at once. And it's a great, fun time and a lot of great ideas exchanged. And that's the Coffee Party Radio lineup for the week. We bring that to you every week. We have a couple more shows that we're looking at bringing online. But remember, most importantly, folks, is that the Coffee Party is a totally voluntarily funded and member-funded organization. We don't have any PACs that are looking to give us a lot of money to promote their causes, or we don't have any dark money organizations funding us. So if you go to coffeepartyusa.com, then you can actually become a member. You can either become a member on a one-time basis, you can have a recurring donation, a membership fee, or you can feel free to make a one-time big donation. Either way, we do need funding if we're going to promote the actions that we want and raise ourselves to the level of, really making a difference. It's great that we have a 500,000 people that come regularly to our Facebook page, but if we're going to turn that momentum into live action, then that does take money. And if you'd like to see that happen, then again, please go to coffeepartyusa.com and click on the donation button. So with that, 770, I appreciate you holding for me. Your mic's open. Who are we speaking to?
Hey, this is Pat Thompson calling from Georgia.
Pat Thompson. I got to tell you something, Pat. I don't know if your ears were burning earlier today or we had a psychic connection. I literally went back to a voicemail that you left me. Oh man, it had to be back in September, and I kept it all that time. and I was listening to it, and you were replying to my message about getting involved with the Coffee Party. So you know what, I don't know. I haven't discussed this with you earlier. I don't know if I should just tell all these people what a wonderful thing you did last November and on the run-up to last November, or if you want to tell them. I don't know what your preference is, but I'm honored and glad to have you on the show.
Hey, no worries. I just wanted to give everybody some bit of information from what's going on in one of the worst ethical states in terms of money and ethics, since that's the topic tonight. We've been able to make a little bit of progress. On the ballot this year, they slipped in an ethics bill, which basically doesn't let anybody take more than $100 from a lobbyist. Now, they've already figured out ways to, obviously get around this, splitting up an event or, what really counts as lobbying. At first, Nick, the legislature let the...
You're talking about it at the state level in Georgia?
State level, yes.
Okay, in Georgia. That was one of those pieces of background information I didn't know how much you wanted me to give. So, yeah, so Pat is... Pat lives in Georgia, and sorry, go ahead, Pat.
Yeah. So that's a little bit of progress anyway, in that we embarrassed them. We embarrassed the legislators to the point where they knew they needed to do something, because there were no limits. The only limit on the legislature was basically, in their words, it was, well, if you don't like somebody, you vote them out. If they're not doing, if you don't think they're doing the right thing, you vote them out. Well, the voting record shows that no one gets voted out. Once you get in your end until you are ready to move, until you want to move, no one really knocks anybody out. So that's not going to happen. People just keep collecting the money, and they keep in the lobbying funds for trips, games, events, even trips overseas. It's an incredible string of things that people have done. But we embarrass them to the point where at least that money has dried up tremendously this year. At least it's a first call. By no means is it anywhere near what it needs to be in terms of donations and dark money, as you talk about. As soon as this is kind of going in place, that dark money is already seeping into other things. So it's just found another place to hide.
Yeah, that's and my analogy with money is that it doesn't matter what you're talking about, whether you're talking about politics or business, it doesn't really matter. Money to me is like rain running down, falling on top of a mountain, and it will find its way down. The inertia of money is inescapable. It's almost a property of money. It will find its way down. If it runs into a big boulder one place, it'll just go around it, and it'll find another way. And if it can't, then it starts pooling up. Eventually, they'll wash that boulder away, or maybe drill a little hole through it and start going through it. You can't stop it. If money is if you allow people to take money, if you allow there to be a demand for the money, then somebody will supply it, and they'll get it to them one way or other. I truly believe that.
Yeah, so our legislature here responded with a bill they came up with, which was, well, you know, if you're going to go talk to a senator or congressman, you need to register as a lobbyist.
That good, and I know we have that at the federal level. And
yeah,
I know you do have to register as a lobbyist at the federal level.
Well, that didn't go – no, it wasn't – no, you missed the point. The point was –
I'm sorry.
Anybody who wants to – if I as a citizen by myself – I would like an appointment with my congressman. Oh, you must register as a lobbyist.
Ah, very good. Okay, that makes total sense. Okay, cool.
No,
right, so we're all lobbyists now. Cool.
Well, the public rejected it totally. They said, you know, you can't. This is you represent us. You can't make people become lobbyists just because they want to talk to their senator or congressman. And that was their way of saying, well, okay, you want rules on lobbyists? Well, everybody's a lobbyist. We said no. So that idea got rejected very quickly.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I got all excited there for a second. I thought, well, at least it's fair.
You don't need to become a lobbyist to talk to your representative. You voted them in office, or you didn't vote them in office. They're your representative. You want to go see them, you go see them. You get a time on their calendar, and you go see them. So they've tried to combat it a couple ways. It hasn't worked at all. I feel good that there's a couple of tiny drips of changes happening. As you were talking, Dan, I ran a $5,000 campaign last year for Congress. I was told on all sides that I was crazy, but I put a stake in the ground to say, why do I need money to run for office? What is the purpose? What is the grand scheme of collecting money when so many people are out of work that could use that money? What's the opportunity? And I ran against a $5 million machine with a lot of other dark money that I don't even know about. I think that's where we need to get to, is if we've shed some light on where the money for these offices is coming. If people had to report, for example, actually show their taxes. Let me see money coming in and the money going out. Where did your money go? I think people would be really shocked. Even people who donate money would be really shocked as to where their dollar went. And until we have that type of sunshine and that type of openness, then I think everything gets hidden.
There's no doubt, and I think that's it, right? So I think what people said, well, if we can't get, you know, money, corporate money out of politics altogether because of the Citizens United decision, at least, then the next target was let's go for at least full disclosure. And there's a decent amount of disclosure when you do direct campaign contributions to a candidate. And that's both at the corporate level and at the personal level. But these dark money organizations like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, like the ones run by on behalf of big businesses and on both right and left leaning within left leaning groups, I mean, that's really in the end, it's like if we cut off everything else and those things still exist, where are we? We're nowhere. We're absolutely nowhere. You know,
yeah,
they know
yeah.
who to thank with a vote or a push of a piece of legislation here or there or a contract. They know who to thank, But we don't know they're thanking them, do we? It's
exactly.
It's,
in Georgia,
it's almost insulting to the intelligence.
Yeah, you can't get in trouble in Georgia. In some of the work I've done, I've actually exposed some of that dark money and brought it out. And when I did, people changed their filings. They changed their records. And so I asked, hey, is it okay to change, go back for the last 6 years, for example, or 7 years and change your records? And the answer was, well, it's not against the law. So there's no ethics law that says you can't change your records after the fact, even when you've been exposed about stuff that's really heinous. But there's no law that gets them in trouble.
Yeah, that is crazy. Let me ask you a question, right? So just again, for repeating for the listening audience, right? Pat actually ran for Congress, not state legislature. He ran for Congress. Do you mind telling us whose district you're running and who are you running against?
Yes, because his name is up again. He's actually trying to run for, as you know, Senator Saxby Chambliss is leaving here in Georgia, and this gentleman wants to take his place, and that's Dr. Phil.
Okay, we're not going to promote him. We do not like him that much. That's fine. I'm good with that. And it is Saxby Chambliss wasn't necessarily the greatest guy in the Senate, but you know what? As far as the GOP, he was one of the better ones, and one of the ones more willing to reach across the aisle than the others. And it is absolutely a shame to see him announce that he's not going to run for re-election. It is a shame, and I am scared.
Right.
Having lived there for 15 years, Pat, and in Marietta, I am scared of who might replace him.
Well, our two front runners so far are Dr. Phil Gingrich, who has tried to defend. He's our area Todd Akin.
Mm-hmm.
And he's
okay.
Should know better. Right? He should know better than some of the comments he's made about women.
Yeah.
We have Paul Bruhn, another doctor over in Augusta. He's the one who came out and said that he thought that all he had learned about evolution, Big Bang, and other things was from the pits of hell, that it was all devil's work, non-scientist.
A doctor.
He's another doctor, yeah.
So presumably he went through biology classes and chemistry classes and he just went along so he could get his degree, knowing all the time that it was BS? It's like these things are like insulting to my intelligence. It's like, really? Did you just say that?
Yeah, our third guy is Dr. Price, who's currently a congressman. He's running for that office as well. Dr. Price is he's another one that's off. And I guess all three of these guys are extreme right, extreme Tea Partiers. Whether they're really Tea Partiers or not, that's who they cater to. And that's why these weird statements are coming out.
Wow.
And that's what you have pursuing this selection now. And so that has invigorated the other candidates to say, maybe we can look better than they can. So there may be some very strong Democratic candidates coming up for Saxby's place. It's the first opportunity they've had because you're running against crazy.
Yeah, that is out there.
No one normal has stepped forward yet.
No one normal. Well, it's time for you to get back on the campaign trail, Pat.
Well, that's the other thing. These guys leave, and then they leave a gap. Now, the last guy I ran against, it was a state Senate seat 4 years ago. He actually won. He actually wrote me out of his district, just my tiny precinct, so I would not run against him, which is why I ran against Phil Gingrich.
Ah.
He won his race, no challenges, and then promptly left the office. Now, he works for ALEC. He's treasurer of ALEC, has worked for ALEC for years. He's been a lobbyist. He's been a lobbyist in office, but he's been nice enough to say, well, I don't lobby during the session, which is only 42 days. I lobby outside the session. So he just left. The governor, Governor Deal, gave him a job at public television, Georgia Public Television, for $150,000 a year. The Republicans are embarrassed. They can't say anything because the governor here is so strong. They're all worried about repercussions. They don't like it. He's the highest paid state employee. And and he's not a broadcaster. He's not a journalist by trade. They gave him a job, which was basically a go over here and work for a while. You're embarrassing us, so go over here, get out of the way, give you this job. I was appointed by the state. So now Georgia Public Television is losing a lot of funds, right? People are losing their sending donations in. They're so outraged. People who are at public television already, who have worked their way up, I mean, people that are doing the same type of job, which is a producer, they don't get anywhere near that money, and they've been there for decades. So some of those people have said, I'm leaving. But that's what you're doing. I'm leaving the company. It's just a whole string of misadventures like that. One of the last embarrassing things that senator did before he got out was he held a UN-21 agenda session for all Republicans down at the State House, which is the sustainability thing, like the you're familiar with 21. It's the UN dark plan to take to use sustainability to take everybody's property away, right? So it was just an embarrassing thing to the body. They paid him off to get him out of the way. It's just been a whole string of incidents. So, of course, when this guy leaves office, they have to have another election, which costs more money, right? Not a single Tea Party came out and said, oh, this is, you know, wasting money. It costs hundreds of thousands of dollars to hold another election. And that's the thing with these open positions. There's not a law here in Georgia that says, well, if you're going to run for something else, you got to stop doing what you're doing. And you can't run for that other position. You got to leave and leave it to somebody else. So all these guys don't really have any threat either. They can run for something, and they can lose and slide right back into their slot. No questions asked.
Wow. Yeah, again, in my 15 years there, I constantly was scratching my head about politics in Georgia, and it was almost like just when you think it couldn't get any wackier, it got wackier. Just when you didn't think people could get farther to the right, people got farther to the right. I'm like, really?
Yes, it is. It is absolutely changing. I will say that the demographics here are drastically different than when you were here. It is becoming a very diverse, much more diverse group of people. It's just that the people who vote right now have a pretty huge block in anything. It's been proven here that you could just be a shoebox, but if you have an R on the shoebox, you'll get elected.
Yeah. No, I hear you. So I very much appreciate you calling in. And I very much would like to know, so the initiative for the lobbying initiative, where they maxed it out at $100, that just was enacted for 2013?
Yes.
Okay. If you don't mind, I would very much like to, as figures roll out, you know, like comparing year over year, I would love to know if that's had any real effect on lowering the total amount of dollars received through lobbyists.
Yep.
That would be great to know because, you know, it's something we were talking to Joe before earlier, you know, they were talking about state, totally state-funded elections. And no outside money. And, you know, so these things are being tried and, you know, and incubated at the state level. We need to keep an eye on them, and we need to promote the ones that are working and hold them up for others to go, oh, yeah, I'll take some of that too. So anything you could do to help us on that front would be great, Pat.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, phenomenal. Thanks for calling. Again, put you into the green room, as it were. If you hit one, you can take your hand down. If you want to chime back in, you can just press one again. Again, this is Dan Aronson. Thanks for tuning in on a Monday evening and spending it with us. We are talking about dark money, all the different ways it gets into our political system from the left, from the right, and now seemingly from the White House. It's just amazing. It seems like there is no shame in it, and you know, if people want to sell off influence directly from the White House level, well, hey, that's okay. Especially, I guess, because the guy there who I voted for, I helped put there, doesn't seem to be spouting out against this and saying that this is a bad thing. So it's very, very disappointing. But right now, I want to bring in one of our regular callers, Jack Golding from Kansas. Jack, your mic is opening up. How are you doing this evening, sir?
Yeah, I'm doing fine.
That's great. And, thanks for calling.
Okay. What I want to say is that the problem is I'm going to keep harping on the primaries, and I think it's related, and I think that should be open primaries like they have in California.
Okay, and I know you've talked about this on our show before, but remind the listeners who might be new to this concept what an open primary is.
Okay, like they had in around the time Arnold Schwarzenegger was there. In other words, you don't have to request a Republican or a Democratic ballot. You just vote, and you vote. You may split the party. Maybe you vote for a Democrat for Secretary of State, or Republican for governor, et cetera, and have a Green Party member for state representative or whatever the heck you do. And there's 100 different places where you can go. And I think that very much would be for it. I believe that the lesser that the Barack Obama may cave in on some of the stuff the Republicans are requesting, like on Social Security, it's the Haven Prior, whatever it's called. What do we call it? I forget the name.
You're talking about austerity?
Austerity, yeah.
Okay. We're gonna just cut the payouts to people who have paid into Social Security all their lives who now need it, and we're just going to say we're not going to burden the corporations with more taxes. We certainly can't burden the job creators with more taxes.
Yeah,
so I'm sorry, there's nowhere for us to get any more money.
Creators.
So
yeah.
Sorry, Mr. Retired Person, you'll just have to get half your Social Security. On what planet does that make sense?
Chain CPI, I know. That stinks.
Yeah.
And anything that... they're paying too much attention on the lamestream media to Paul Ryan.
Yeah, somebody needs to stop talking about that guy so he'll go away. He is a goofball of epic proportions. Now, that's Dan Aronson, political commentator, saying that, not the coffee party.
Okay.
But
there's some Republicans that will sign in for tax increases and the stuff like that, or gun legislation, but they're not in Congress.
Right.
They follow like a bunch of lemmings, party loyalty.
Well, exactly.
Party loyalty is something I do not tolerate. I mean, tolerators is maybe too strong of a word, but I don't agree about it.
No, people that just vote straight tickets are just don't. It's almost like they're lazy.
Okay,
it's like you're not putting enough thought in it.
Okay,
and I don't know if you heard our previous caller Pat Thompson, who actually
came in the line. Okay. I'm going to say this, that when I was 14, I just chided my dad on voting a straight Democratic ticket. That's stupid. I just called my dad to question all that. It was back when I was 14 yet.
Yeah, I'm guessing what was it? Was it the switch? Was it a paddle?
No.
he actually let you get away with it?
He let me get away with it. So that's in effect, I didn't say stupid. I said the idea of a straight ticket voter, whether it's Republican or Democrat, I don't think people vote a straight ticket. Not too many vote a straight ticket anymore. He said a lever and say, vote for all the Republican candidates or also all the Democrat candidates.
I don't know. I think you'd be surprised, Jack, as to how many people do that. And to me, again, you could call it stupid, but to me, it's lazy. It's just that you didn't want to go out and, you know, everybody has an idea when they go to the polls who they're going to vote for president. Maybe if you've got a congressperson or a senator up for election, maybe you take the time to learn about those guys. But how many people are really taking the time to vet the candidates for the lesser positions, for the local positions, for their county positions, for their state positions? You know, it's like, I know Republicans, I kind of agree with them, so I'll just do a straight Republican ticket. I mean,
that's the way it is in this part of Kansas. When I vote, I know I could vote for Obama, but when it came to the local guys, they were no Democratic candidates in Stevens County, Kansas, Hugoton, Kansas. You leave it blank or you voted for whoever it was. Hughes Camp was my congressman. Now he's a big mocker in the Tea Party. Hughes Camp.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how can we get the people? How can we get people more invested in their government?
I'm going to say I'm going to keep harping on this. You need to have face-to-face, old-fashioned way, face-to-face talk.
Okay.
Brainstorm the problems. I don't think it's doing the internet as effective because you're scattered away to hell. You need to somehow or other to get people. And I know whether it be a coffee party or whatever, nation. If I'm going to get involved in Washington, they have to give me transportation there and back, and a hotel room to pay for everything, because I cannot donate and I cannot do diddly dick. I want to get involved somehow or other in local. And maybe the best way may be to get involved with the school board.
Sure, that's as local as it gets. It's nobody really cares about it outside of the school district, right? The people inside the school district want the best schools for their kids, and sure, why not? That'll be a great place to start. Or maybe something else in a city government.
Yeah, because somehow or other, get involved. They don't have anything to get involved in. Okay, we used to have a coffee shop. We used to have town meetings in Hugoton, Kansas, but that closed down the end of 2011. And it just recently turned, that coffee shop is now a church. And we got churches galore in Hugoton. Nothing but churches. You're in the heart of the Bible Belt, which is where I am.
Gotcha. Well, Jack, as always, very much appreciate you calling in. Any final words for this evening?
Final words would be, you got to push for on the federal level. You got to first of all get on Harry Reid's tuchus and tell him to change the filibuster law. You don't have the. I think he's as guilty as McConnell.
Yeah.
As far as we get legislation, because they don't change the filibuster, not even to do away with the hold. That's one. They got to do away, first of all, the Senate, the filibuster, and with the House. You got to do away. You got to persuade that, like Obama's trying to do, split the. Get some of those Republicans to. Not have follow what's his name? Novor Norquist.
Oh, go, yeah.
And the Tea Party, you know what I mean? And the Koch brothers and all those organizations, yeah.
Okay. All right. Always a pleasure, Jack. Thanks.
Thank
hope
bye
to hear
bye,
from you
yeah.
next week. And that's Jack Golding from the heart of America, from our breadbasket in Texas. Jack was our last caller in queue. I see I've got a couple other callers that are hanging out. Looks like you're just listening. I've got Joe hanging out as well. We've got some, looks like it's, we're running, we need, in the chat room, it's looked like we're in the need for the Geek Squad. We've got overheating computers and people falling out of the chats. Dharma, always a pleasure. She's been very active in our chat room this evening, as is Joe. The subject tonight was dark money. This is Dan Aronson, Press One for Democracy. And if we're out of contributors for the evening, we can shut it down a bit early. We were scheduled for another 15 minutes, but I think we've had a very lively conversation. I think all have agreed we need to find a way to get these dark money organizations out. If we can't get them to disclose, out is better than disclose. Disclose is better than nothing, which is what we have right now. I want to share a big shout out to Pat Thompson, who again ran for Congress as a Democrat in Georgia, and if you're familiar with Georgia politics, you know what an uphill battle that is, let alone doing it on a $5,000 shoestring budget. Big shout out to Pat, and I think he's a great voice for the coffee party, and here's the guy who firsthand found out it was like to battle the forces of dark money. Jack Golding from Kansas, Joe, let me open your microphone one last time, if you don't mind, so you can kind of play us off, as it were. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, it was a great show. I enjoyed it. Chat room was a little crazy tonight, but I've got that up too. As a group, are basically going to have to take this a day at a time, step at a time. Look, I'm a facilitator, if I could use that word. I'm open to ideas of trying to control the money if it can't be eliminated. If someone could come up with a way that someone with a lot of money that wants to benefit the people in the area he's going to put behind that candidate, and the candidate can basically say, this is what my citizens in my district need, all right? And as a donor, regardless of the amount of money. I respect that and want that for his citizens, all right? I think, you know, if there's a way to make accommodations, fine. I just, you know, we live in a fast-paced world. And I'm going back over 12 years. What I've witnessed, what I've seen happen, we don't have that kind of world anymore. You know, if there's somebody out there with that kind of money that's that honest, that caring about his country, I don't think he should be penalized. But, you know, the fact is these people are basically buying representation through dark money or overt political donations to PACs, right? And if the person later on, as has happened in Massachusetts, he loses the election, and now he's working for a Wall Street firm, making twice the money he did as a senator. If I have senators in Congress that are going to leave office to make five times their salary, okay, we get beyond money in that type of area. And, yeah, I'm at a loss for the moment how you're going to rein that in. But if we don't rein it in, we're not going to have a government. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know where we'll go from there.
Well, I think it's a coffee party. I think we're figuring it out. And, Joe, as always, I very much appreciate your participation and hope to talk to you soon. And actually, I think maybe my threat of going off the air early has encouraged somebody else to join in. Area code 513. I've either got total short-term memory loss or you're actually a new caller in the queue.
No. Yeah, you're threatening to go off that thought that I'd say something useless.
Laura, how are you?
I'm okay, Dad.
I thought we had your procedure going on or whatnot.
Yeah, it doesn't mean I can't make a phone call.
Well, I don't know. So did you have it? Are you okay? Is everything good? Or?
Yeah, I'm mending. You know,
cool.
Full recovery means
you can
go back to lifting up the bag of groceries and whatnot.
Well, that's phenomenal. We are all so happy for you. You know you've got a lot of people that were pulling for you and praying for you, so I'm so happy to hear you, and you sound like you're a wonderful spirit, so good. So
I have a good boyfriend. That helps a lot.
You found the one, huh?
Yeah. Sad to tell you, I so agree with you about Paul Ryan.
That's
the Laura Simmons, not the coffee party.
During the election, you know, once around he had picked him, and when he would say things like, look, I've got the budget plan, it's going to be great, and you just have to trust me. Well, show it to me. No. Well, okay, give me a brief outline of the numbers in your plan. No, you wouldn't understand it. It's okay. You just have to trust me. Just trust me. It's great. I'm like...
To the fly too.
it's not that. For me, it's. I always try. I'm a sales and marketing guy, so I always look at not what people say, but what drives what they say. And I always want to know what's in the mind that you hear something like maybe you're at a restaurant, you overhear a conversation, and somebody says something that's so just out there, and you just go, what in the world were you thinking? What was in your head that made you say that? What is your thought process that you're going to tell 300 million people, trust me? Yeah, trust me. I got this. Don't worry about it. Yeah, I'm going to get America back on their feet, put everybody to work, and it's not going to cost them, and we're still going to be able to fund all the wars, and we're going to fund all the programs, we're going to fund everything, and it's not going to cost anybody anything. And you go, well, wait a second, excuse me, I took Econ 101. That doesn't work. Can you explain that to me? No. I mean, I could, but you wouldn't get it. So just trust me.
Can you give me a little credit for having a part of a brain at least?
But again, and that's the obvious retort. But again, to me, it's like I want to get inside that guy's head and try to understand how he thinks, on what planet he thinks that would have worked.
You know, Dan, I got to tell you, the thing that truly, truly amazes me in this world is that there seems to be people who think and people who want to believe those magic words.
Which is almost the scariest part of it, since their team pulled 47% of the vote. With those words coming out of that man's mouth.
Yeah.
It's
people did the old follow the Pied Piper.
Well, and that's what Jack was saying about people who just vote straight party tickets, right? It's like, yeah, well, you know, it's I don't know, is it laziness? Is it that they're misinformed? Is it that they're, like you said, they just sip the Kool-Aid and they just believe it? It's so hard to understand the mentality. But again, you know me, I always go back. Forget those 47, you know, percent of the people. Forget those 58, 59 million people. What about the 80 that didn't vote? And I think people are getting less bamboozled and more just, you know what, I've heard this pitch before. It's like a timeshare. Just give me my, you know, free weekend and leave me alone. I'm not buying. And they just don't play.
Yeah. And I will tell you, I was surprised the last time I voted. How many times there was no other choice?
Well, people complain more about John Boehner than any other guy I know in Congress. John Boehner ran unopposed.
Yeah, we had a lot of that.
it's like, really, there's nobody in Ohio. I mean, no Pat Thompson that would step up to the plate and say, with no money or whatever, I mean, I'm not letting this go down without a fight. I mean, I'm sorry, if you're in John Boehner's district and you hear my voice, I'm very disappointed in you. Do something about it. Please. Pretty please, for the rest of our sakes. Laura. So, anywho, so we were talking about dark money tonight and the way that the money funnels in and the corruption funnels in, and we can't even figure out where it's coming from because of these organizations. Any ideas how we can put these people back in on the shelf?
Yeah, you know, once you let it go on, it gets so complicated, Dan. Yeah, without knowing, you know, oh God, I mean the books and the tricks, and the problem is, you know, the best way to solve crime.
No.
Put the criminals in charge of helping us write the laws.
Why? that's very interesting. It actually where that is actually very prevalent, that practice is in computer hackers. The computer hackers would get caught, they'd do 6 months in jail, and then they would get hired by private companies as computer security guys.
Yep.
Say, hey, make sure my computers can't get hacked by guys like you.
Exactly.
And that's what we have in Washington D.C. today, right? We have a free flow of personnel between service and whether they're serving, they're actually the politicians serving, whether they're staffers, and then they go to work for K Street, and then they go to work for other lobbyists, and they go to work for other special interests, or they go to work as regulators, and then they go back into private industry, and I mean it's just this revolving door, and you know. Pretty soon, everybody's indoctrinated into the criminal's way.
Yeah. Well, I think the problem is if you're really an honest person, I mean, how many times has there been a regulation that you had to comply with and you wondered why they asked you to, like, show an ID or fill out a question when you open a bank account or something silly like that, and maybe you asked. And you're like, I would have never thought of doing that. You know, because you were an honest person.
Yep.
So an honest person can never write the laws because they never would have thought of how easy it is to be dishonest.
Boy, that's very interesting. I never thought of it that way, Laura. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
I like that. But I guess that's how you start out with a small set of laws, and then you grow to. I know my father is a semi-retired criminal defense attorney, and when I go into his office and I look at just the laws of Illinois, it's mm-hmm. like 50 volumes. I'm pretty sure in 1818, when the state was founded, there weren't 50 volumes worth of laws. I guess all you could do is react. But isn't that the problem? Is that the criminals didn't? If criminals are like a virus, they just, you get the antibiotic that kills them, they'll just mutate into something else, and now you've got to find another one, and you're always chasing them, right? They're always one step ahead.
Yeah, there's always a smarter, sneakier, more devilish one that figures out how to manipulate and distort and where that little loophole is.
Yep.
Yeah, just like I asked Janine once at lunch with Loudon. I'm like, why do we have to have a specific law to protect everyone? All men are created equal. What is so hard about interpreting that one? Well, it's because that doesn't include women because it says men. And, it reminds me of the little argument, devil's advocate. Well.
Oh, no. You got to give Janine credit because I was going there myself. I mean, and it's not just a matter of, don't forget the semantics of it. When that statement was made, an African-American counted as three-fifths of a man. He didn't count as a full man, and he certainly was not afforded all the protections under law, and the women were not. The women didn't have full rights like men did either. So let's get there. I'm all for getting there. Let's just declare it. But, I mean, somebody's got to declare it, right? Somebody has to say, no, everyone, all people, you're
yeah,
equal.
Exactly.
But even today, people are going to say, yeah, but that only counts for American citizens. That doesn't count for illegal immigrants. That doesn't count for it. They'll always find a way to exclude somebody, right?
I feel the need to degrade someone. I got to have someone that I can degrade.
Well,
someone
absolutely.
That's less than me. Somebody's got to be less than me.
And the joke of that is that when you look at the history of America, right, unless you're a full-blooded Native American, you emigrated from somewhere. You were an immigrant. And most likely you were an illegal immigrant at some point in your life, or somebody your family was, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's almost like, well, we got into the club. Okay, now, no more. It's like you're getting into that hot club. You're going to that club, and there's that guy with the rope and the clipboard. And he's like, only 150 people can get in. And then you're going, oh, great, I'm the 150th. And everybody else outside is going, wait, why can't I get it? Why is it that you got to be the last guy in?
There is an element of luck. I mean, there was a time when you got over into this country and there was a Homestead Act, and if you got the right piece of property at the right time
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as we used to say on the tennis courts in Atlanta, always better to be lucky than good.
Oh, yeah. Good
talk. All right, Laura, we've got a couple minutes left. Any parting thoughts?
No, sir. You have a great night, everybody.
You do, too, and it is so wonderful to hear your voice and to hear you so cheery and to know that you've come out of this little thing you did on a good note. So all hugs and kisses.
Thank you, Dan.
All right. Take care, Laura.
You, too.
All right, everybody. We're going to shut it down here now. This has been Press 1 for Democracy. This is your host, Dan Aronson, Coffee Party Radio. Again, remember, we're an all-volunteer organization, so please go to Coffee Party USA and sign up if you're not already a member. Donate more if you are a member. Give till it hurts. We need everybody's help in advancing the causes of the Coffee Party. Also, a quick word, don't forget tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Western Time. We have The Middle Ground with Michael Charney and Eric Beilers. It's going to be a very cool show. They're going to have a special guest on tomorrow night and talk about the struggles of mainstream Republicans trying to deal with a party dominated by kind of radical Tea Party thinking. Thursday, we have lunch with Loudon, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon on the West Coast. And Saturday, we have Politics Done Right with Egberto Willis, 1 p.m. on the East Coast and 10 a.m. on the West Coast. So again, this is Dan Aronson. Please come back and join us for some more spirited conversation and fun on Press 1 for Democracy next week. We'll see it, and we are out.